Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
My new book, Diary of a Psychosis, is out. It's the most lively, devastating baseball bat to the throat takedown of what the public health establishment did in 2020 and beyond that you can imagine. It's my first book in 9 years, and you're going to love it. Check it out at diaryofcovid.com. And if you've already bought it, make sure also to visit diaryofcovid.com so you can claim your free bonuses, including my free companion volume, Collateral Damage, a collection of stories from real people who suffered under the restrictions. They weren't allowed to tell their stories at the time, but every one of them told me, "We just want to be heard." Check it all out at diaryofcovid.com. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Tom Woods Show, episode 2455. And our guest today has probably heard many times over the course of his career that he needs no introduction. You all know Judge Andrew Napolitano, and he is the host of Judging Freedom, which is a podcast that has absolutely exploded in terms of its reach, its audience. Unbelievable. How many times a week are you putting that out?
Well, Tom, it's always a pleasure to be on with you. Your audience should know that we are longtime friends, and I am, after Jenna, your biggest fan.
Thank you, Judge.
I put up about 15 to 17 shows a week.
Oh, okay. That's a lot.
Yes, it is a lot. I've been fortunate to have a lot of top name people that come to me, people that I didn't even know personally before the show started. And as you know, it has morphed into an area that, though I'm learning a lot about, is not my expertise, either academically or professionally. My expertise in those areas is the U.S. Constitution, but I've been the go-to place for a version and an understanding of the war in Ukraine and the war in Gaza, decidedly at odds with the Biden administration, decidedly at odds.
You know what's funny is that occasionally on Twitter, you'll see neocons complain that the problem with Biden is he isn't pro-Ukraine enough, or he isn't pushing these wars quite enough. That is not the problem. They're completely misdiagnosing the problem. I noticed you did an episode not too long ago about Julian Assange. Now, it was encouraging to me that Vivek Ramaswamy was insisting that Assange had been treated grotesquely unjustly and everything should be dropped and the guy should just be left alone. It's not so clear that Trump feels that way, although Vivek does seem to have his ear to some degree.
You know, I don't know how Trump feels. I will tell you that, as you know, was the Trump administration that indicted him for espionage. However, in my last phone call with him while he was president, he called me to elicit my opinion on some pardons and commutations. And I thought I had talked him into pardoning Snowden and Assange. And then he later spoke with me and said, "You did talk me into it. But you know, Judge, when you and I talk from the White House, and I'm in the White House, there's 15 other people on the call, all sorts of national security people. And about three of them changed my mind on both Assange and on Snowden."
Incredible. Incredible. Who's running the country?
Now, he may have changed his mind again. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But what people say is they say that Assange endangered American agents and things of this nature. So what's your overall take on that question?
Well, Assange didn't endanger anybody. The Bush administration slaughtered innocents and their soldiers boasted about it. That's what's on those tapes. The Supreme Court has made it crystal clear in the Pentagon Papers cases that the publisher can bear no civil or criminal liability for the public revelation of government information as to which there's a material public interest, irrespective of how the publisher got it. Now, Assange got it from Bradley Manning, who was convicted of theft of government secrets and sentenced to 45 years in a military prison. His term was commuted to time served by President Obama shortly before President Obama left office after Manning had served about 5 years. This is reminiscent of Pentagon Papers because there, the thief who stole the documents is on trial for espionage, and the FBI raids his doctor's office, his psychiatrist's office. The trial judge is so furious about that that he throws the charges out. Of course, the Pentagon Papers case absolved the Times and the Washington Post. So the law is very clear. I don't know how they survive a motion to dismiss made at the outset, notwithstanding what Assange has gone through in this hellish place, Belmarsh Prison, outside of London.
Isn't it interesting that, as in other cases like this, nobody thinks, well, leaving aside Robert Kennedy Jr., who's not campaigning as a Democrat, nobody thinks, well, if the right Democrat gets in there, maybe we can get a pardon for any of these people. Nobody even thinks that. The only hope is that there's some sliver of the Republican base that might be able to support a candidate who wants to do that. The Democrats have become a completely hopeless cause on stuff like this.
Correct. As have the liberals or Labour in Great Britain. I thought for a moment, if Labour controlled Parliament, they would spring him, but they won't. Great Britain is a vassal state, totally subject to whatever the United States wants. And I don't know what the Democratic Party stands for today. The Democratic president is the biggest warmonger in the country. He's supplying Netanyahu with all the material with which to engage in genocide in Gaza, and at the same time saying, well, there should be a two-state solution. It's absurd to speak out of both sides of his mouth. But there doesn't seem to be, getting back to Assange and Snowden, there doesn't seem to be any political base supporting them, with the exception of libertarians and a few progressives, but no significant people in the government. I'm sure Rand Paul and Thomas Massie are on our side on this, but they're only two of 535 members of Congress, and I would imagine 95% of the others are in favor of these ill-advised prosecutions.
What's the real reason that they dislike him? For all the highfalutin talk about principles.
He embarrassed them. He humiliated them, just like Daniel Ellsberg embarrassed and humiliated the Pentagon and the Johnson administration in the Pentagon Papers. We're talking about Assange now. Assange totally humiliated the Bush administration. And there's that, we better protect the Bush administration because we need the fill-in-the-blank administration to protect us if we're embarrassed after we're out of office. And the same with Snowden. Snowden totally humiliated the intelligence community in the United States because it revealed rampant illegal wiretapping. Nobody suffered for it. Nobody was prosecuted. As far as I know, nobody lost their jobs. The only other person prosecuted was this woman, Reality Winner, who's another whistleblower who revealed secret documents and secret spying. But none of the actual people doing the computer hacking, doing the spying, was prosecuted as a result of Snowden's allegations. And nobody was prosecuted for the war crimes perpetrated by George W. Bush. I don't know, maybe he thinks he can pardon people for war crimes, but in the International Criminal Court, of which the United States is not a party, there's no statute of limitations on war crimes. I don't think Bush can go to Europe, George W., well, the other Bush has passed on. I don't think President Bush can go to Europe. I believe there's still a European-wide arrest warrant out for him.
I somehow wasn't aware of that.
I believe a Spanish magistrate, name escaping me, but very well known in Europe, issued the arrest warrant, and it's still there. It's still out there.
It would be fun to watch that executed, we'll say.
Yes.
All right,
yes.
So I wanted to make this more of a potpourri episode than just on Assange, although I did have Gabriel Shipton on, who's his brother, talking about a documentary film they made about him that's very effective and that gives a little bit of a glimpse into what his life has been like with his wife and his family. But I want to ask you about, for just a few minutes anyway, Tucker Carlson. Of course, we all remember when he left Fox News, and at that time it was very unclear what the circumstances were. And now he's got this platform on what I still stubbornly call Twitter. And he recently, you know, we all know about the recent Putin interview. What are your general impressions of him? And what do you think about what he's done since leaving Fox?
I thought the interview with President Putin was terrific. I thought it was an act of courage, and it was sort of thumbing his nose at the mainstream media. I'm not surprised they blasted him over it. I think they were all jealous, just like they're jealous of Cy Hirsch exposing the true source of the bombing and destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline. They're jealous that none of them got the interview with President Putin. The questions, I thought, could have been a little bit more aggressive, but to sit there for 2 hours with the president of Russia and elicit the answers that he did, I thought it was absolutely fabulous. It showed an intellect on the part of Putin that I think amazed the Western world, because all we know is Biden says he's a killer and the neocons want to use Ukraine as a battering ram to drive him out of office. Here was a very intelligent, very restrained, very articulate man, and my hat is off to Tucker. Look, he and I have had our difficulties at Fox, but that was then, and this is now. He did a magnificent public service. He deserves all the kudos he can get. Now, he didn't get just kudos. You probably saw that ludicrous tape of Hillary Clinton calling him a useful idiot. And the only thing that the mainstream media praised him for was listing more or less a commitment to spring Evan Gershkovich, the Wall Street Journal reporter from New Jersey, who's been arrested for spying. I will tell you that one of my people, Scott Ritter, tells me there is a very serious, very credible case against Evan. Very serious and very credible. And Putin knows it, and the DOJ know it, and that's why whoever's traded for Evan will be very, very, somebody very high ranking in the Putin wish list, because the case against Evan is strong, and if he's convicted, he'll never come back to the United States.
Let's thank our sponsor, Factor. Mealtime can be stressful. You're busy, you want to eat well, but you're tired. You can't bear the idea of dirtying up the kitchen yet again. Maybe you don't have the ingredients you need, and you struggle with this every single day. Factor is a great solution. With over 35 different options a week to choose from to have delivered straight to your door, including keto, calorie smart, vegan and veggie, and more, it's easier than ever to have a week's worth of meals ready to go, no stress. Pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor's restaurant quality meals are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. You'll discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. And Factor's delicious meals are less expensive than takeout, and they're good for you. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, upscale options done easily. And there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Head to factormeals.com/woods50 and use code woods50 to get 50% off. That's code woods50 at factormeals.com/woods50 to get 50% off. What do you feel like the current fortunes of the neocons are in 2024 America?
I have quoted you probably twice a week in the past year and a half. And this is really one of the greatest quotes of the modern era. You know exactly what I'm about to say.
The McCain
one? No matter
one?
Who you vote for, you end up with John McCain. Tom Woods. I say that all the time because that's what we have today. Whether it's a hard lefty like Barack Obama, whether it's a moderate Democrat who has suddenly become a hard lefty like Joe Biden, whether it's a right-wing authoritarian like Donald Trump, you end up with John McCain. They want to kill whoever they can, just to show how strong they are. And that's the neocons. It's not just Lindsey Graham. It's Victoria Nuland. It's Jake Sullivan. They're in both parties. They are subject to AIPAC, the Jewish lobby, the Israeli lobby. They're everywhere in the government. I don't think they're fretting at all, because I think that they know whoever wins, they'll have the same amount of influence with that same person. Oh, Trump may not want to aid Ukraine, but he'll give Netanyahu everything he wants.
Even on the Ukraine thing, I had Colonel McGregor on my show. I know he's quite a regular on yours. And I asked him if he had seen a video, I don't know, from a couple of weeks ago. Trump was in Nevada ahead of their caucuses. And he said he was emphasizing that the Europeans just aren't contributing enough and they've got to contribute on a level that's comparable to what the U.S. is contributing. And I just thought that was such an odd thing to say, that of all things to be upset about with regard to the U.S. policy toward Ukraine, inequality of contribution as compared to European countries would be down about number 517 on my list of things. So it didn't even sound like somebody who just wanted to pull the plug on it or anything like that.
Well, Trump needs somebody like McGregor around him to guide and advise him. Although I love Colonel McGregor. He is so intellectually honest, he would soon become deeply frustrated with Trump, like every good person who's been around him. After a while, you just can't take it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I remember back in 2016, I was thinking David Stockman for Treasury Secretary. And I mean, Stockman would feel like he's got to resign in the first 5 minutes. It would just not work.
Right.
You know, it's funny. I had one time when I had him on, he told me that in 1980, Reagan had called him and asked him if he'd like to be the Secretary of the Department of Energy. And he said that he told Reagan, well, actually, I'd really like to be OMB director. And that Reagan paused and said, well, I don't know exactly what that is, but let me talk to the boys and I'll get back to you.
So, wow, and that's what he ended
exactly
up with.
But he got that position that she held for 4 years, and then he just couldn't take that because there was nobody cared about the budget. And by the way, it seems like we're right back there again, where nobody cares about the budget. I mean,
correct.
Like, Trump does not care at all. That does not concern him at all. There isn't even a remote pledge to keep an eye on it at this point.
No. Trump loves debt. There's no question about it. I got a kick out of the comments about NATO countries where Trump said, you got to pay your bills. You know anybody more notorious for not paying their bills? I mean, the reason he lost that case in New York is because one of the best trial lawyers in the city quit 2 days before the trial was going to start because Trump hadn't paid his bills from the previous case.
Well, I want to ask you about how much you've been following, you know, what was your as you say, your area of expertise. You know, there are several justices on the Supreme Court who have not been on there that long, who are appointed by Trump. And I wonder if in following the various decisions, if you've been particularly impressed with any of them or particularly disappointed in any of them or what your thoughts are.
Oh, I love Neil Gorsuch. I think he's the closest thing to a libertarian that there is on the court right now with respect to both original intent and the concept of natural rights. I think he's absolutely terrific. One of my favorite Neil Gorsuch dissents is one that he wrote with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it had to do with a guy who was tried twice for the same crime, once by the feds and once by the state of Alabama. And Sam Alito, who never met a government lawyer he didn't agree with, I say that as he's my boyhood friend, I introduced him to his wife. We were at Army ROTC together. We were classmates at Princeton. I still see him socially, so Sam knows sometimes I criticize him. But Sam wrote an opinion saying, the double jeopardy prohibition is not against repeated prosecutions. It's only against prosecutions for the same offense. And the state offense was different than the federal offense, even though the very act, felon in possession of a weapon, was the same. And Gorsuch and Ginsburg, so you have a progressive lefty and a libertarian righty agreeing on the plain meaning of the Constitution. I thought it was simply, even though they lost 7-2, I thought it was simply marvelous. So I am a big fan of his. I am not a fan of the other two appointees. I think they're sort of middle of the road, John Roberts, Republican types. Now, I was interviewed by Trump, as you know, twice for the court. But at the end of my first interview, he said to me, well, if I had to give it to you or Gorsuch, who should I give it to? I said, you'll have a lot easier time getting, he was then judge. Judge Gorsuch confirmed that you were getting.
Oh, he hasn't said the things you said.
And Trump goes, well, listen, everything I learned about the Constitution, I learned from you on Fox and Friends. I said, look, I've said a lot of crazy things on Fox and Friends in order to entertain the audience. You're not going to have that issue with Neil Gorsuch.
Yeah. No, I hear you. So, all right. That was kind of my impression because I've read some of what Gorsuch has written. What was the case about that guy who he had to bake the cake because it was the whole controversy about, should he be required to bake a cake for a homosexual couple kind of thing?
Correct.
And then the decision, I don't know if you read, I read the whole thing. The decision came down to all kinds of minutiae about the meaning of cakes and what and the cultural significance of cakes. And
they don't want to confront that issue. You and I have an answer to that. And that is that the Civil Rights Act of 64, insofar as it purports to regulate private behavior and private property, is profoundly unconstitutional.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you start there, first of all, you won't get confirmed. But if
Correct.
You start there, then the answer to the question is obvious. And you do get the sense that Clarence Thomas wanted to make the case about more fundamental questions than whether cakes mean this or cakes mean that. But one way or another, they somehow came out with more or less the right answer, but could have, I like Gorsuch myself, but he's no Scalia, in my opinion. He's in the ballpark, but he's not quite the same guy.
Well, Scalia was a sui generis if ever anybody was. Was one of the great gifts of my life was to be his good, close confidant and friend the last 10 years of his life. I loved him, even when we disagreed, which was usually over Fourth Amendment issues. I loved my time with him. I'll tell you a funny Scalia story that you will appreciate. He calls me up at Fox one day. It was a Wednesday. And he said, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, well, I'm actually going to be in D.C. tomorrow. He says, good. Get down here in time to go to Mass with me because it's Ascension Thursday, which is not a holy day of obligation in Washington. Now, it is in New Jersey because the then Archbishop of Newark, who's the suffragist for the various counties in New Jersey, said it is.
So they transfer, just for anybody listening who doesn't understand, sometimes a bishop will transfer it to the following Sunday.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I went with him to Mass. The priest was African-American and he had African-American garb on. There were three people at Mass, Justice Scalia, me, and his clerk. And he said, we're going to protest the fact that nobody goes on Holy Thursday. That's Justice Scalia. I remember at a dinner party with him once where he says to me, I'm going to propose a toast to Pius the 12th, but not everybody here is going to appreciate it. I said, okay, so propose it to Pio Duodecimo instead of saying Pius the 12th. Everybody will think this is some great historic figure that we're all supposed to know and love. What do you want me to say? I'll say, the greatest pope ever to reign over us. So he stands up and does this thing to Pio Duodecimo, the greatest pope ever to reign over us, and the crowd roars. And I say to this lady next to me, you know what I was about? She goes, well, no, but I roared because everybody else was, and I saw how enthusiastic you were about it. I don't know who this guy is, Pio Duodecimo. That's Scalia.
That is great. That is great. Well, you know, I have not quite as good a story, but I will say, now that we're exchanging stories, that at one time I delivered the address that I delivered. It has this particular name. I have the framed thing they gave me hanging up in my office somewhere. But I was at Benedictine College in Kansas, and the Archbishop of Kansas City in Kansas had come to like me quite a bit because of a number of my books. And I actually invited myself to dinner one night. I thought, what's the harm? I'll bring my wife and we'll go to dinner with the Archbishop of Kansas City in Kansas. And I drank a little too much at this dinner, Judge. I drank a little too much. And so I became quite aggressive with him, saying, look, there are all kinds of liturgical abuses in this archdiocese that we got to crack down on, and your music program's a disaster. But the thing is, he stayed my friend because he's surrounded by yes men. And I was an honest dissenter who he knew, you know, my heart was in the right place. But anyway, so he invited me. So I spoke, I gave the whatever centenary, whatever the address was. They were eating up three quarters of it. I got three quarters of the way. They loved everything I said about the church and Western civilization. But then in the last quarter of it, I said, you know, but if we really do care about the church's tradition, we have to care about the way that tradition is expressed in how we worship. And so then I went into a thing about how there are students at this college who for years have been asking for nothing more than the simple return of the old traditional Latin Mass. And again, if we care about Western civilization, we should care about that, which inspired so much of the great music and art and whatever. The Archbishop was on the dais with me. The speech had not been vetted, Judge. So when a couple of months later, I was invited to address all the Catholic school teachers of the entire archdiocese, the secretary told me, the Archbishop has requested that you refrain from discussing liturgical matters and stay focused on the issue at hand.
Wow. I'll tell you another school year story. Notre Dame University, of which I'm an alumnus, offered him the Laetare Medal, which is their highest award, and it's accompanied by an honorary PhD in philosophy. And he said, "Open up your email." All right, what is it? What is it? He sent something from his personal email, a letter just ripping Notre Dame from pillar to post. It's Catholic in name only, going back to the Land O'Lakes statement with Father Hesburgh. He just went through chapter and verse of every modernistic Catholic excess that Notre Dame's going to do. What do you think? I said, well, why don't you just decline it and tell him you're not available? Oh, no, I'm going to send this letter. He sends the letter. The letter gets made known. What do you think Notre Dame does? They gave the Laetare Medal to Joe Biden. And oh, was Nino furious. I said, well, you brought it on yourself. What do you expect them to do?
Oh, geez. I miss sitting around telling stories. By the way, one of my cherished photos is from 2009. It was that time that you and I were at Ron Paul's River House, and then we went to the old Latin Mass together the next morning.
It's
a picture of me. We had gone out to eat, and it was a picture of me and you and Barry Goldwater Jr. And in that picture, I'm sitting there because I was still in my 30s then. And I was sitting there thinking, how has my life taken this turn that I am at this dinner with Judge Napolitano and Barry Goldwater?
And you know, Barry Goldwater Jr. looked and looks exactly like the old man. You can tell everybody that that's the Barry Goldwater and they'll believe it.
Oh, in fact, I told him once, I said, look, just put on the thick rim glasses just for a minute.
Right, you know,
I have to see it for myself. Hey, everybody, quick word from Woods here. It's my goal to have the best supporters program out there, better than anything on Patreon or anywhere else. Support the Tom Woods Show, and not only do you get entry into my No Censorship Tom Woods Show Elite group, but you also get the 16-page Tom Woods Elite letter mailed to your home every month. Who else is doing that? This is all new material, completely different from the emails I send, and it is red hot. My supporters also get invites to my murder mystery dinner parties that I've been holding around the country. I'll be adding more cities soon to woodsmystery.com. I hold these in penthouse suites at luxury hotels with a beautiful catered dinner. It's a ton of fun. I also invite my supporters to my annual Christmas party. And the higher up you go as a supporter, the more things you get. Some supporters even get a small gift in the mail from me every month in addition to the newsletter. So go check it out, supportinglisteners.com. You will not believe all the goodies at supportinglisteners.com. And my profound thanks to all of you. So anyway, so let's just say a little bit more about your, I'm very aware of your time constraint, and so I won't go over that. But you were mentioning that your podcast took an unusual turn in that overwhelmingly you emphasize foreign policy. And even when you're talking about somebody like Julian Assange, that still is more or less a foreign policy topic.
Right.
So,
right.
First of all, how'd you let that happen when you're more of a constitutional guy? Was it a question of vox populi, vox dei? This is what the people want?
These guys just made themselves available to me. I'm not a pro-war person at all, although there are pictures of me with a crew cut and a t-shirt saying Bomb Hanoi back from my Princeton days. I was in those days. Now I'm the other end of that spectrum. So I thought, well, let me try them. I put them on Scott Ritter, Doug McGregor, and boom, the numbers go through the roof. And then they see the numbers and they ask if they can come back. And then people came to me. Have you ever interviewed John Mearsheimer? Professor Mearsheimer is just one of the most charming, talented, brilliant scholars I've ever met. And Jeff Sachs, who doesn't agree with you or me on any other things, but does on foreign policy, is absolutely terrific. These guys are now regulars and they score huge numbers of views. And so I just sort of, like you saying, what am I doing at this dinner with Barry Goldwater Jr.? It's like me, what am I doing with all these foreign policy people? Some of my people have been friends of mine for years and were sources for me when I was at Fox, intelligence community people. McGregor I met because he was advising Ron Paul's campaign one year, when the last time Ron ran for president. But these guys have just done so well with my viewers, it's all taken on a life of its own.
That is absolutely tremendous.
Rarely discuss the Constitution. It's almost exclusively now Ukraine and Israel.
I've had Stephen Walt on my show a couple of times, but never Mearsheimer. And it's interesting that up until a few years ago, there was a long period of time after the war in Iraq, and then there was some speculation that maybe there'd be war with Iran for some time. But I used to read what every time there'd be a major war, but particularly that war in Iraq, I would read antiwar.com every day to see what was really happening.
Antiwar.com, and I read it every morning.
Yeah, but then foreign policy almost seemed like it took a back burner for a while. I mean, it's not like they stopped bombing or there were no conflicts, but they weren't as big as the Iraq war. But now suddenly you could very easily have a podcast on foreign affairs just on the basis of Ukraine and Gaza alone, given how momentously important they are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've just sort of walked into it, Tom, and the viewers have rewarded me. I mean, the numbers are simply mind-boggling, to be honest with you. I mean, last week, my numbers were better than many MSNBC shows, many CNN shows.
Do you think your past with Fox News has to help in terms of getting people who
talk
to you?
You know, it helps, and it hurts. I still have FOX on my forehead, which still turns people off. Some people perceive me as anti-Trump, even though I've been defending him, or I shouldn't say defending him, attacking the prosecutions of him lately. It helps and it doesn't help. It depends on who I'm dealing with. I'm at Newsmax now. I'm not there full-time like I was at Fox. I've got to be on with them in a few minutes, but I'm on with them, I would say, about 7 or 8 times a week.
Well, let me give you one further chance, given that you don't talk that much these days about the Constitution or the courts and stuff as much as you used to. Here's a big opportunity for you. I have been a little bit black-pilled, as they say, on the future, in part because I'm concerned about where the law schools have been going, and therefore where the graduates of those law schools have been going, that more and more, I mean, at least there used to be a pretense that even if it's a political enemy of mine, I'm going to try to look at the evidence and be reasonable. But you get more the sense that people are being trained to be activists. You find the outcome that you want. I mean, they're not going to put it quite that way, but you can find the outcome that you want if you try hard enough. And right. I think if that prevails more and more openly, then I don't know where American society goes. Now, on the other hand, I've had people say to me, oh, don't worry about that. That, yes, there are a lot of crazy law school people, but there are only so many judgeships. So as long as we get a decent number of those, it doesn't matter if there are a lot of crazy lawyers out there. I mean, how do you look at it?
Law schools are hotbeds of leftism, hotbeds of leftism. You could count on one hand and not use all your fingers of a law school that even has significant natural law scholars or originalist thinkers on it. All the rest are hard left, overwhelming. You know, I've been a member of the faculty of Delaware Law School, of Seton Hall Law School, and of Brooklyn Law School, and I was just an odd duck in every place that I went to. I'll tell you, my most recent book is called An Introduction to Natural Law Constitutionalism in America. Freedom's Anchor, An Introduction to Natural Law Constitutionalism in America. And none of my former colleagues are interested in it. We scrutinized every Supreme Court opinion that expressly accepted or expressly rejected, impliedly accepted, impliedly rejected the concept of natural law and natural rights. One professor at Rutgers uses it in his philosophy course, but nobody's really interested in that in law schools today. They're just interested in result orientation. However, somebody in the Vatican, yes, Francis's Vatican, got their hands on the book. And next month, I am a speaker at the Pontifical University in the Vatican at a 2-day conference on the 750th anniversary of the death of St. Thomas Aquinas.
Holy moly, Judge.
Yeah. Yeah. Quite, it blew me away, to be honest with you. And when they called me, I said, yes. Now, I have the same view of Francis that you do. I don't think he even is involved with this in any way. Cardinal Parolin is going to be there. Cardinal Urdu, who's another papabile, is going to be there, not Cardinal Burke.
Who is not papabile.
Well, that's for sure. It's leading Catholic academic scholars in the world, plus me. And mine is on the reduction of American jurisprudence from natural law to positivism. It's an easy story for you and me to tell. It's painful, but that's what happened. So I'm looking forward to that. And then I got offered to do the same thing at the University of Milan, which, as you know, is like the University of Chicago of Italy.
Well, we have a friend at the University of Milan, Marco Bassani.
Okay, so
you should be hooked up and have a nice lunch with him.
Alberto Mingardi, who runs the Brunelleschi Institute.
Sure, he's great too.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that is great. That is great. Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Judging Freedom is the name of your podcast. Is that also a web? Do you have a website under that name?
Judge Knapp.
JudgeKnapp.com.
JudgeKnapp.com has all of my 700 or 800 prior op-eds. I still write one a week. They're all there, and all kinds of other interesting stuff, not just about me, but about the views that we embrace.
Okay. So, yeah, you've had Judge Knapp since back when you were on Fox, I think.
Correct.
Okay. So that has remained the official home for Judge Andrew Napolitano. So judgeknapp.com, I'll also put that in the video description, as well as on the show notes page. This is episode 2455, so tomwoods.com/2455. Judge, thanks so much for your time. Great to catch up with you and hear how well you're doing.
Pleasure, Tom. I don't know if your viewers know this. It may be a secret, but I'm going to spill it anyway, that I am the godfather of Mrs. Tom Woods.
That is correct. That is She considers that to be one of the great honors of her life, honestly.
Well, you were married by a saint, not me, a great human being, Father John Perricone. And I look forward to a mini reunion with you and Jenna and Father John Perricone when you're up in New York in April.
Yes, absolutely looking forward to that. Thanks so much again, Judge, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Tom.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.